Okay, Erev Tov. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope if I haven't spoken to you, which is probably true in most cases, hope everybody had a very nice yontif. I don't know how far Pesach is in the rearview mirror, but I guess it's supposed to last until Shavuos, the seventh in between. But okay, hope everybody's doing well. Of course, it's a good thing this year is at 8:30 at night, so not so many people from Israel are here, because we're like already a week behind. And as I'm sure most people know, are aware, this week, of course, in Israel is Kedoshim. So maybe I should talk about that. It's a lot easier than talking about Achrimot. Lots more good stuff. But of course, this is because the last day of Pesach in Chutz Laaretz, of course, was on Shabbos. I mentioned it a couple weeks ago in my shiur. The reasons are pretty obvious, because first of all, the laning that we have was established outside of the land of Israel. Right, I've mentioned a number of times, Simcha's Torah doesn't make sense in Israel. I mean, I know it's not a nice thing to say, but it just doesn't fit. The moods of Shemini Atzeret and Simcha's Torah are two totally different moods. Makes sense. In Chutz Laaretz, you have two separate days. In Israel, the whole thing is different. What should I put? For those who've been there, I think I find it very strange. But okay, that's the way I grew up. Israelis don't find it strange. But the laning, the whole cycle was established in Bavel, and we want to read Parshat Naso right after Shavuos, but maybe before, so whatever. There, we're not. I still don't know why we don't combine, Chukat Balak. I don't have a good explanation, and even to combine Bahar B'chukotai Archer and Kedoshim. If it was up to me, we'd combine the weeks this week's with ketchup, Achrim and Kedoshim. But of course, that's not how a traditional society works. It's not up to me. And whatever. And as I mentioned, in the 1200s, this affected maybe four people every 10 years. How many people traveled back and forth? Today, I wrote an article about this, I see, in 2019 when it last happened. And I estimated that it affected a million people, minimum of a million people, because Ben Gurion Airport, apparently between the months of April and July, when we catch up the week before Tisha B'Av, we'll only catch up in Matan Masay. There are 20 million visitors a year through Ben Gurion. Okay, so they're not all Jewish, and let's say half are Jewish. And then there's another couple million who don't come through Ben Gurion. So let's say this, it's about a few million people at this time of year. And let's say a quarter of them go to shul, 25%. So that's around a million people. A million people are either going to miss a parsha. I'm going to hear one parsha twice. Okay. Anyways, Nunu, if it was up to me, we'd convene the rabbis and we'd declare we're going to read Achrimot Kedoshim this week. But as you all know, it's not up to me. Okay. So that's just by way of introduction. But since it's 3:30 in the morning in Israel, I don't think we have to worry too much. And it's always good to do last week's parsha too. Rav Soloveitchik famously used to give the parsha shiur on last week's parsha. For many years in Boston, the Rav gave a shiur every Saturday night in Maimonides. Parsha shiur, I think in the winter, I don't think he did it in the summer. And I mean, I was never there, but, and he always spoke about, the prior parsha, because he didn't want all the rabbis to come to his Russian they don't have to work. You want the rabbis to have to work. If they want to use it next year, I guess that's okay. But so it's okay. Always good to do the prior parsha. Okay. Let's talk about Achrimot, which I think right off the bat is an appropriate parsha for Yom HaShoah. Today, I'm sure people, if you're not aware, that's part of the problem of Yom HaShoah, that it's J.J. Schechter wrote a very well worthwhile article reading that Yom HaShoah sort of, I don't know what to call it. He's lamenting what's going to be, how are we going to memorialize the Shoah. As I'm sure many of you, maybe you don't know, there was a big debate about Yom HaShoah in general. Of course, it was established by a secular Israeli government for the Warsaw Ghetto and uprising. That's not the firm way to memorialize something. And it's in the month of Nisan, all kinds of excuses why not to observe Yom HaShoah. Although my understanding is even in the Haredi communities in Israel, it's becoming a little bit acknowledged at least. At least they don't walk through the moment of silence. I don't really know. More interestingly, Rav Herzog, the first chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Kook was the first chief rabbi under the British mandate. But he died in 1935. So he was not the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. The first chief rabbi of the state of Israel was Isaac Halevi Herzog, of course, whose grandson, whose name for him is the current president of the state of Israel, and his son was the president of Israel, Chaim Herzog, and his other son was the ambassador to Canada, Yaakov Herzog. The other son was a big Talmud Chacham, tremendous Talmud Chacham, very, you know, from guy, the ambassador to Canada. He died a young man before, you know, I would have known of him. But anyway, so Rav Herzog wanted to establish Yom HaShoah as a fast day. And my son-in-law now, I think, has been doing a lot of research on Kaf Sivan, the 20th of Sivan, which was a fast day for hundreds of years. And there was very common. They used to institute fast days. So how can we not have a fast day for Yom HaShoah? We have a fast day on Tzom Gedaliah. I hate to say it. The Holocaust was way worse than Tzom Gedaliah, worse than Shiva Seren Tamuz, and I will argue worse than actually Tisha B'Av. And so if we have fast days on all those days, surely we could have a fast day for Yom HaShoah. And as you know, there is no fast day for Yom HaShoah. And these things are not easy to do. The Brisker Rav was very much opposed to it. And that's J.J. Schechter's sort of article that meant, will it become part of Tisha B'Av? Like many of the other tragedies of the Jewish people, we say kinot. Okay, that's a traditional response, but somehow I think he and other people feel there's something lacking. The Shoah is so unique and different to sort of incorporate him into Tisha B'Av. Maybe we need its own day. But anyways, that's sort of whatever. We'll see what happens. And of course, I don't know if you saw in the news today, I guess after 2 years, they had the March of the Living. And I think it's much smaller this year, about 2,500 people. Usually they get thousands and thousands. And they had only 8 Holocaust survivors on March of the Living. And they think next year they'll have none. It's the youngest Holocaust survivor is, you know, 90 years old. He's born in 1934. So he was 11 years old when the war ended. Okay. So he's 88. But, So we're ending the end of an era, and you know, pretty soon the people being born today are never going to meet a survivor. That's sort of, I don't know what to make of that. Anyways, I say that because it's Yom HaShoah. I think it's important to talk about it a little bit. But of course, that's the opening of the parsha. Achreimot shnei bnei Aaron. The parsha, very strangely, opens up with the death of Nadav and Abihu, which we read about in Parsha, you know, Shmini. What in the world is it doing here? But you see, the notion of death, and let's say, well, we'll see it in a moment, the death of the righteous. The death of the righteous serves as atonement, and there was no, of course, greater death of the righteous than during the Holocaust. So the question is, why are the deaths of Nadav and Abihu mentioned here? And they died, I want to say, a few weeks ago, but they Shmini, you have a lot. You got Shmini, Kashrut, Tazria, Metzora, and people have mentioned that. Why is Nadav and Abihu's death mentioned here? Anybody want to venture a guess? Or not a guess? If they know the answer, they don't have to guess. Of course, I don't know if it's the answer, but an answer, an approach. So the simple answer, which is really the answer that Rashi gives, the simple answer is, because now the parsha is going to talk about how Aaron enters the Holy of Holies. And that's, and the Torah is warning us, don't make the same mistake that your children make, because you're going to die. I think Rashi does quote the Midrash, that somebody warns, Rashi quotes it, a doctor warns a sick person, don't eat this food, it's not healthy for you, okay? And the next doctor warns a person, don't eat this food, don't smoke, because then you'll die like this person who died of lung cancer because he smoked. Don't smoke, okay? Don't smoke because you might die of lung cancer. That's a much more powerful message. That's what Rashi quotes. Obviously, doesn't use lung cancer, but it's the same idea. And so the Torah, before Aaron is going to enter into the Holy of Holies, God says, don't do what they did. Nadav and Abihu. And it's, of course, it's the same language, Vayakrivu. They brought forth Nadav and Abihu, Vayakrivu, Eish Sarah. They brought forth, they came close to God, so to speak, with an Eish Sarah. And here, Bekorba Tamli Fnei Hashem Be'emutu. So that's the introduction. So really, it doesn't have, it's nothing to do with anything. It's really just a warning. It's not that there's something, there's no real connection between Nadav and Avihu and what's going to happen. It's just we're telling Aaron not to make that mistake. Now, what I find very interesting is, let's take a look. I'll share my screen for a moment, and we'll take a look what the Gemara says that Rashi does not quote. Rashi does not quote this. Here, where are we going? Cancel. Okay. So here, by the Vershem Moshe Acharemot Shnevin Aaron Karvton L'Hashem. So Rashi quote. So I have here the Torah Tmima. So the Torah Tmima says, Lama maskir mitatan shvi yom ha-kippurim. Why is there a death mentioned on Yom Kippur? Lam lecha kashem shvi yom ha-kippurim mechaper al Yisrael. The same way that Yom Kippur serves as atonement for the Jewish people. Kach mitatam shel tzadikim mechaper al Yisrael. So too, when righteous people die, it serves as atonement. We have to understand what that means exactly. But the Torah Tmima is quoting Gemara in Yuma, Yerushalmi, you see in the brackets, that the reason it's mentioned is it's thematically mentioned. It's not a warning to Aaron. It's a thematic. What's Yom Kippur? Aaron's going to go in and do all the atonement of the Jewish people. There are two ways to get the atonement. Yom Kippur or the death of the righteous brings atonement. Now, Rashi, I put here the Chabad website. This is Rashi. I know it's small letters. I could do it the other way. Rashi doesn't quote this at all. Rashi doesn't quote most things. I mean, he quotes 0.1% of rabbinic commentary, right? He only quotes, it's a whole, when you study Rashi, when the Chama Leibowitz is, when she studies Rashi, why does Rashi quote this Midrash and not that Midrash? That's the whole thing, not just to read Rashi. You have to understand how his whole methodology. But what's interesting is if you look over here, and Parshat, in Chukat, when the death of Miriam, by Avo B'nei Yisrael Kolidam Mitbartzin B'Chodesh Rishon, the Jewish people came to meet Bartzin, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Chodesh, which is, of course, a very important biblical date. That's the beginning of the Exodus. It's when the Mishkan is dedicated. And here we are 39 years later. And it's a new generation. The Jewish people arrive in the desert, Vatamat Shem Miriam. And Miriam died. And she was buried there. So Rashi wants to know, Lama nismecha parshat Miriam le parshat paraduma. The Torah just talked about the paraduma, the red heifer. Lamar lecha to tell you, ma'av korbanot mechaprim. Want to mute yourself if you don't mind? To teach us the same way sacrifices atone, right? Paraduma is a sacrifice. So too the death of the righteous atone. So, of course, to me, I mean, the question is, why does Rashi quote that teaching only by Miriam and not by Nadav and Abihu? The Gemara quotes it on both. The Gemara quotes that the death of the righteous serves as an atonement both by the death of Nadav and Abihu and by the death of Miriam. Rashi, in his commentary on Chumash, only quotes it by the death of Miriam. So I have a theory. If anybody else has a theory, I'd like to hear.
Well, you could suppose that Rashi doesn't subscribe to the idea that Nadav and Avihu are such great tzaddikim.
Excellent. That's exactly what I think. Right. That appears to be the point that Rashi doesn't. I mean, it's not it's funny. I have the Art Scroll Chumash in front of me. So, of course, Art Scroll here quotes it, why is the death of the righteous not even a view mentioned in conjunction with the chapter of Yom Kippur service? Because just as Yom Kippur brings atonement, so the death of the righteous brings atonement. They quote the same Gemara that Torah Tmima quotes it. And which that's fine. Nothing wrong with that, of course. But it's cute because, Art Scroll is so beholden to Rashi. For those who were in Shul on Shabbos and read Shir HaShirim in the English translation by Art Scroll, you don't know what book you're reading because it's not a translation. That's their famous thing. They introduce why they refuse to translate Shir HaShirim. I don't know what Art Scroll thinks Israelis are supposed to do if they know Hebrew. Like they know what Yinishkei Mipiu Tovim Dotech Miyayin means. But okay, whatever. Art Scroll refused it to translate. So they're all beholden to Rashi. But here they're not beholden to the Rashi. It is not, but presume Miriam, why did Miriam die? That's a problem. I don't know why Miriam died. Why Moshe and Aaron died. I mean, we don't know exactly what was so terrible about what they did, but it's clear the Torah thought it was pretty terrible because the Torah mentions you didn't sanctify my name. But So you have to figure out, what did Aaron do wrong? It was Moshe who hit the rock. It was Moshe yelled at the people, right? And Aaron goes along with that because he's with Moshe. Okay, I kind of understand. He didn't interfere. It's a little bit hard to understand. What did Aaron do wrong? What did Miriam do? Why did Miriam have to die? So, yeah. I'm sorry?
They all had to. They're the old guard. They have to.
Had to die. Of course, Med, Dinitziv, others, Kwan, none of them died because of hitting the rock. That's not why they died. They died because it was a new generation. You needed new leadership. No matter who you are, you can be a Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the right leader, the rightest of leaders for the Exodus and giving it to her, but he was not the right leader to take them into the land of Israel. You needed, Moshe was the supernatural leader, and they were going to now have a natural existence. Yoshua was the military commander, like Eisenhower, you know, like in many countries, it's not the military. Israel is full of it, Rabin, and so many of the military leaders and guns now, everybody. Not every prime minister, but many of them were, you know, Begin, other who fought were military leaders of the Israeli government. So that's Yoshua. That's in Israel. So it's not so they had to die. They were old. She was 123 years old, you know. And so that's the simple explanation. Of course, we added in, maybe Moshe could have gone in as a retired leader. And maybe that's he was punished. Maybe, okay, that different people say, you don't like that. Okay, some people like that. But that seems to be the idea why Rashi doesn't quote it. Now the other thing just to point out is, why does the Torah mention Nadavinu's death? The Torah has this habit, they do it by Moshe and they do it by Nadav and Avihu. Every time they get an opportunity, they mention their sin. It's like, It's almost painful to read. So by Nadav and Avihu, it's mentioned at least four times in the Chumash when it happened in Parshat Shemini. Now for the introduction to Yom Kippur, in the census of the Jewish people, in Bamidbar when they count, so they go through. Here's a tribe of Levi. Oh. No, Aaron had four kids, but, you know, two of them don't make the census because they died. It's like what the Torah does on Yehuda. If you remember when the 70 people go down to Egypt, tells us Yehuda and Aaron Onan. Oh yeah, but they died. They were punished. They had other. The Torah apparently wants to very much harp on the mistakes of the people to warn us. And then again, in the census in Parshat Pinchas, Bamidbar, of course, is the two census. I don't know what the plural for census is. So it has the census in Bamidbar and Pinchas. So that's four times Nadav and Avihu sin is mentioned. The same thing by Moshe and Aaron. The Torah mentions four times, you didn't sanctify my name. When it happens, when Aaron dies, when the Yoshua is, when God, right after Benot Slofchad, it's also in Parshat, right after Benot Slofchad, right before Yoshua gets appointed as the leader, that transitional moment, Benot Slofchad is going to inherit the land, Yoshua is going to be the new leader. Moshe, come up to Har Abarim Har Nevo and see what, because you're not going there. And then, I don't know if it's the same story or not, in the Zod HaBracha, the last thing God tells Moshe to come up to the mountain, is that the same going up to the mountain, or did he go up to the mountain twice to suffer now? But again, in the Zod HaBracha, so four times, the Torah very much likes to mention it. So it could be whenever they mention it, they just mention. I mean, it's just a fascinating thing. I don't have a, you know, great answer, but you see the phenomena of the Torah doing this. Apparently, the Torah really wants to drive home the sins. Now, of course, we know that Nadav and Avihu and Moshe, whatever the sins were, they were minor by comparison. Nadav and Avihu got too excited. Then we have their 18 explanations, what they sinned. They were drunk. They wanted to wait when their uncles are going to die, when this, when that. We don't really know. And whenever we have six explanations for something, you know, we don't know the reason. That's the famous Nachman Leibowitz reason. When even Rashi even has two explanations, you know, neither of them are perfect. Each explanation has a problem. Rashi would not give a second explanation if one is good. So B solves the problem with A, but you can't use B because B has another problem that A solves. So it's the combination. So we don't really know why they died. They were minor sins, but great people. God is medaktekim sadikim kuchud hasara, our sages teach. God is exacting with the righteous like a hare, you know, like a little, they sin like a little hare, then they're mentioned. So that's one idea. Okay. So you have by Miriam. Okay. So now it's also very interesting. We mentioned their death here. The whole parsha is about life. right? The whole parsha. Okay, the first half of the parsha is about Yom Kippur. Although you may or may not have noticed that it really only mentions Yom Kippur at the end, right? If those who have really good memories will remember that last year Rabbi Nadi Helfgott gave the shiur on Achrei Mot, and he spoke about Bezot Yavo Aharon El HaKodesh. With this, Aharon should come into the holy. Right, the Valyavo B'Cholei El Ma Beit LaParochet. This is how you come in. And he brings the korbanot. And many of the commentaries note that Bezot, it's not on Yom Kippur. When Aaron had the right and permission to go to the Holy of Holies whenever he wanted to. Just whenever he wanted to, he had to bring this ritual of sacrifices. He couldn't just walk into the Holy of Holies. By the way, that's, we all have that. The mitzvah of Re'iyah. Elud varim shelim shira peya habigurin harayon, and we say every morning, right? Shalosh pamim bashana yireko zuchorcha. We just said it every day over Pesach. When you come to the temple, you have to bring a korban. It's not right. You don't show up to the temple and not bring. How much do you bring? So that's shalmei simcha. You bring olot, and an olot you give, dedicate to God. You bring a, what we call, the Shalmei Simcha, a korban shlamim, which means you get to eat it. Simcha of joy, and the Mishnah goes through in Chagig. It depends how wealthy you are, and depends how many people you have in your family. If you have a big family and not a lot of money, you bring a lot of shlamim, and you don't bring a lot because you can't afford to. And if you have very few people and a lot of money, you bring more a lot. But whenever anybody came to the temple, don't just walk to the temple. You don't go to somebody's house on Friday night meal and not bring a gift. So you don't go to the God's house, right? We spoke about that. There's no Kabbalah Shabbos, no Kabbalah Yontif, because we're going to God's house. We don't welcome ourselves to God's house. We bring a gift to God's house. So everybody brings a korban. Aaron, if you want to go to Holy of Holies, you got to bring more korbanos. You got to do even more. So that Yom Kippur doesn't really get mentioned till afterwards. You know, that this event, this is through this, we'll get atonement on Yom Kippur. But of course, Yom Kippur is all about tahara and purity. And of course, death is the symbol of, not the symbol, death is the definition of impurity. What does it mean to be tameh? What does it mean to be impure? It means to came in contact with death. So you can come immediate, you can come in direct contact with the death, with a dead body, be in the same room with a dead body, or you can touch somebody who touched a dead body, or you can touch a dead animal. There are different levels of tumah. By the way, interestingly, the tumah goes down up to five levels, like a bacteria or a virus. When it spreads from one person to the next, it gets lowered and eventually it dissipates. So a dead body is what we call avi avod hatuma, the grandfather, avi avod hatuma. Somebody who comes in contact with the dead body is what we call an av hatuma, the father of impurity. That person is impure for 7 days, have to have the ashes of the paraduma sprinkled upon them on day 3 and 7, right? And then somebody comes in contact with a rishon and some with that and a sheni. So the only thing that can become, let's say, a sheni lituma, like maser sheni can become a sheni tuma. Only truma and truma can become a shlishi. A korban can become a revi and paraduma, a chamishi. But if you have a piece of truma that can't become a revi lituma, that's it. Doesn't go that far. Whatever. That's the boring, you know, technical details of the laws of purity and impurity. But it's the association, the closeness of your association unto death. Death is the definition of tuma. And we mentioned, of course, that's tara is life. Of course, tara, and that's why water. That's why you go to the mikveh to become tar, because water is the definition of life. If they find water on Mars, so we know there's life on Mars, right? That's tuma v'tara are, you know, are of course opposites of each other. Now, what do we do on Yom Kippur? So I think I may be mistaken, but I did a quick count. I didn't do it on computer, but so the Torah talks about here kapara and tahara. Rav Soloveitchik, the first essay in Al Hatshuva, the phenomenal work of Rav Soloveitchik's essays put together by Pinchas Peli on the eight of the talks Rav Soloveitchik gave on his Tshuva drushes. The first one is Kapara v'Tahara. The difference, Kahara is a much higher level. So you have, if I counted correctly, seven, which of course is the magic number, seven times the Torah mentions Kapara, and then it mentions Tahara, and then it mentions Kiba Yom Hazeh Yechaper Alechem with Taharat Chem Mikol Chatotechem Lifnei Hashem Titaru. Right? That's the pasuk we say on Yom Kippur all the time, that on this day, it should be a Kapara, in order to purify the people. So we're going to, from Kapara to Tahara, and then we'll see in a few moments, we're going to go to Kiddusha. The Parsha ends on Kiddusha, which is a higher level. Kiddusha is holiness. That's higher than purity. And atonement, that's a very basic level. You know, I don't sin anymore. I'm forgiven for the sin. Tahara, the Rav Soloveitchik explains, like, let's say we know a gambler is not allowed to be a witness. So when is he, how do you know he did tshuva? So he has to rip up his cards. He has to throw away his dice. Not that he just didn't gamble. Because now if he doesn't gamble, that's a level of kapara. He's atoned for his sin. But to be purified means you won't have a desire to sin anymore. You're so distant from the sin. Kiddusha, holiness, is much higher. Achrimot, of course, is followed. The whole parsha is followed. Parsha Kedoshim, which Rashi says is the most important parsha in the Torah. It's Rov Gufei Torah or Tluyim Ba. The majority of the essence of the Torah is in Parsha Kedoshim. And many years, and whenever it's not a leap year, it is a double parsha. But I don't want to pick up on a point I mentioned in a shiur a few weeks ago about, so if you look here, I'll share my screen a moment. Okay, so let's go back here. So the Torah goes through the, by the way, the Torah here, you don't need a lot of the oral law. The Torah spells out pretty clearly what the Kohen Gadol did on Yom Kippur. The Sa'ir, the Shnei Sirim, the Goral, he puts it here. Like the Torah is very clear. Many parts of the Torah, without the oral law, you wouldn't have a clue what's going on. That's not the case on Yom Kippur, which is actually quite interesting. But then what does he say? If I can find, here it is. The Chiper al HaKodesh, the Kohen Gadol will atone for us again. The Tumat B'nei Israel, from the impurities, and we meet Pishayim and their sins. Pesh and Chet, a sin, accidental sin, a spiteful sin. V'chein Yaseh Lo Moed. And the Omeid Hashocheni Tam B'toch Tumatam, the God or the Omoed, the represents God. That's the Omoed is where God's presence is, who dwells in the people, and who dwells among the people in the midst of their impurity, right? Which abides with them in the midst of their impurity. So the Mesha Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of the Vince, who passed away in 1926, and Vince, I mentioned, has an unbelievable comment here. He's talking about God's, the difference, how God judges individuals and how God judges a community. And he says always an individual in Torah is punished when he sins. He worships idols. He gets a death penalty. God's in sexual sins. He violates the Shabbat. He eats non-kosher. You give him lashes. There are no sins for talk. There's no punishment if you talk Lashon Hara. There's no punishment for sinat chinam. You don't like another Jew, we don't give you any punishment. We just say you shouldn't do it. There's no punishment for any character flaws. There's no punishment for any speech sins. There's only punishment for sort of active sins. And the Mesha Chachma notes that it's the exact opposite. I couldn't find an English translation of it, but the Mesha Chachma writes this in Sefer Shmot on the Shira. The wall, the water is protected, serves as well. And on that verse, the Mesha Chachma has a whole discussion that, why did God punish the generation of the flood? Because they stole. That's what the rabbi said, because of theft. Why does the temple destroyed, or at least the second temple? Sinat Chinam. He says God judges the community on the exact opposite way. And he says that if the Jewish people are united, even when they worship idols, God is Hashochenitam betoch tumatam. And he quotes that verse. Hashochenitam betoch tumatam means tumatam is idolatry. The height of tuma is idolatry. But if the Jewish people are united, God doesn't care. I mean, not he doesn't care, but God is willing to dwell among people who worship idols if they are united. That's why I quoted, if you remember, if those who were here a few weeks ago, I really have to call him and ask him. Rav Schachter told us once, and somebody said, it's better to put an idol in a shul than to have a machloket. Machloket is worse than putting idols in the middle of shul. That's what it's based on. It's based on this comment, or on the Meshach, based on him. It's by he was much earlier. But that's that verse, Hashochenitam betoktimutam, God is willing to dwell. And the Meshach Hakam goes through case by case. He goes through how the King David's army suffered greater losses than kings who were much worse because they talked Lashon Hara, all kinds of things. It's the unity of the people is very, very important. And it's really a powerful idea. God dwells in the middle of our impurities, provided we are united. So the community is always judged how we get along. Individual, you know, you keep kosher, you keep Shabbos, that's between you and God. That's not a communal issue. How much we're fighting and how we help each other and work for each other, that's what the community cares about. So we distinguish between the individual and the community. Okay, so I want to spend, that's I guess the first half of what we want to talk about. The second half, let's move to the second part of the parsha, which of course is the laning. The first half is the laning on Yom Kippur, and the second half is the laning on Yom Kippur. We just skip the Perek Yud Zayin. We don't skip the prohibition to eat blood. I mean, we skip on Yom Kippur a little bit of the parsha. Okay, so I understand why we read the first part of Achrei Mot, because that talks about Yom Kippur. Why do we read the second part of the last part of Achrei Mot that talks about the sexual immorality? Why is that? Why is that read on Yom Kippur?
It's the greatest sermon ever made.
So I'm sorry?
It's the greatest sermon. It's it's fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone. Good, listen, so The beautiful reason I mentioned this in my class yesterday in chat, that we started a new quadmester. So I'm teaching on the calendar. So we're talking about all the holidays, the biblical holidays. I mentioned Yom Kippur. So about our relationship, you know, one of the themes I always like to talk about is, you know, everything in the Torah about God is about man. In other words, the opening of the Torah is that man, why did Torah talk about the story of creation? The Torah does a really lousy job of telling us how creation happened, and all the scientists think it's all wrong, because it is all wrong, because the Torah is not interested in telling us the science of creation. The Torah is interested in telling the ethics of creation, the morality of creation. Well, why the world was created, not how the world was created. It's not a science book. So the first, what's the opening message to our man is created? In God's image, we're created with Selam Elohim. So if we're created with Selam Elohim, how you treat other people is how it shows how you believe in God. That's why the first, if you cheat in business, you don't have any, you're an atheist. Now, it's not just that cheating in business is the first question God asked us at 120 years, right? Nasata v'natata be'emuna. The word be'emuna is a strange word. Emuna means faith. It should say, nasata v'natata be'yashrut. Did you do your business dealings straight, honestly? What's be'emuna? Emuna is a term of faith. Did your business show you have faith in God? So A, you don't believe that God controls the world or your money, but B, if you cheat other people, that means you cheat God, because every one of us is a little bit of God. It's a little bit heretical, but that's the opening message of the Torah, that we're all created b'tzelem elohim. So everything the Torah tells us about God is really a message about man and everything we do. So that's always, so if we have to develop on Yom Kippur our relationship with God, that's what it's all about. That means we have to develop our relationship with man. And we all know that Yom Kippur, God can forgive us. He can't forgive us man to man. We got to go to our friend. But that's why the beautiful minhag that I think, okay, even more important than coordinating the parshiot, if I had another thing that I had the power to do in the Jewish community and change, that would be we would reintroduce Yom Kippur afternoon as done in the time of the Mishnah, where the single young man and young woman would go to the fields and have a singles party. And the girl, I don't make this up, it's what this says in the Mishnah. Lo ayu yamim tovim b'Yisrael, ki yom ha-kippurim u'ketuba av shevahem b'not Yisrael, yotzim b'mechalot. The maidens of Jerusalem would go out in white, purity, Yom Kippur, white, borrowed clothes. So there wouldn't be this, you know, oh, she's wealthy, she's not wealthy. Everybody has the same white clothes. And you go out in the field. Why we do that on Yom Kippur? That's going on a date on Yom Kippur, whether you're crazy. That's, of course, if I develop my relationship with God, I have to develop a relationship with a spouse. And the Rambam writes, when you get married, that leads to the greater love of God. The spouse, is supposed to help each other, the love of God. So if we develop, you can't develop a relationship with man without a relationship with God. So that's why you had the minhag on Yom Kippur afternoon to have a singles weekend, whatever, a singles afternoon. It's very cheap to run. You don't have to serve any food. You know, it's very good. It's like, you know, whatever, going on a date on Shabbos afternoon, you know, it's, you don't have to worry what restaurant you're going to eat at, whatever. It's all nice and simple. And so that's what I think. So some of the commentaries explained, because the boys and girls were going out on dates on Yom Kippur afternoon and going on fields. So we came back to Shul and we read, you can't marry this one, Hilchot Nida, all the laws of sexual ethics. Very beautiful. Yes, there's the standard reason, because this is an area, the Gemara says, we all sin, along with Lashon Hara and cheating in our business dealings. These are the three areas of greatest sin, our sexuality, gossip, and business ethics. So it's makes for Yom Kippur. And I heard, really, it's too simple, you know. We always look for fancy reasons. The reason is so simple, we don't like it. I heard Rabbi Silber at Drisha say, you know why we read it? Because what do we do every Shabbos afternoon? We continue the Torah reading from where we left off on Shabbos morning. So on Yom Kippur, we just continue. Like we did the first part of Achrimot. So we come to Shul at Mincha. We continue the Torah reading. Like the answer is too bland. You can't like that answer, but it makes a lot of sense. Anyway, so we do read this on Yom Kippur. It is chosen. And so obviously when the rabbis choose it for Yom Kippur, and probably all those reasons are true, it's pretty powerful. Now, it's very interesting that the Torah begins, don't be like the Egyptians and don't be like the people in Canaan who did all these terrible things. So I want to point out two things. So first of all, let's see, do I have it here? Let me share my screen for a second. I think I have it. If not, I'll get it. Let's go chapter here. I'll just go here. Okay. Don't follow the ways of the Egyptians. Obviously this was an area, this in between. Okay. It says, Ushmartem et mechukotai v'mishpatai shir so'otam v'chai v'hem. You should follow these, the chukim and the mishpatim. We'll come back to that in a second. That a person shall do asher yaseh otam b'chai b'hem ani Hashem. That a person shall do and shall live by them. This, I'm sure many of you might recognize, this is the source, the biblical source in the Bible, that pikuach nefesh, to save a life, you can violate all the sins in the Torah to save a life. This is the source that the Gemara quotes. You should keep them asher yaseh otam adam b'chai b'hem. The things that a person does, so he should live. The Torah is meant to live by it. So if by keeping Shabbos, you're going to die because you can't get to the hospital because you won't go in the car. You get in the car and you go to the hospital. Asher yaseh that you eat on Yom Kippur. Asher yaseh otam v'chai b'hem. So the source of pikuach nefesh is right before the prohibition of all the sexual ethic, which is interesting because the sexual ethic is the one of the three areas where we don't say pikuach nefesh, right? One of the three sins you have to give up your life. It's not only adultery. It's mainly adultery, but incest, a lot of these prohibitions that are mentioned here in the Torah, don't uncover your stepmother's nakedness, all these things, you know, your mother, your father. So that's also, you have to give up your life rather than do them. It's not so common. We don't see those things happen. So we don't talk about it much, but it's interesting that that's how the Torah, mentions, the laws of the law of pikuach nefesh is there. Now, the Torah also mentioned that it's a chok and a mishpat. Presumably, listen, you can say it's disconnected from what comes next, but I'm assuming this is the introduction to the sexual ethics. Ushmartem et chukotai v'et mishpatai. You should keep my chukim and mishpatim. That's one of the key ways we divide up Torah, the difference between a chok and a mishpat. So the classic way is a chok is something we do, even though it's, or I always like to say, Not that a chuk has no reason, of course. I don't like that. But I always like to say a chuk is a mitzvah that had God not commanded, we would never think of it on our own. Kashrut, shatnez, those are the classics of chukim pardon. I can give you 15 reasons why to keep kosher after the Torah tells me to keep kosher. But on my own, there's no reason to keep kosher. You can be the most ethical, moral, wonderful person in the world and eat glut treif. You know, there's no connection, at least on the surface. Now, yes, the chukim also, if you dig deep, that's what we believe, all the chukim also have an ethical message to them. There's ethical messages in kashrut, but no person would come up with these laws on their own. You want to say some of the chukim, their reasons totally escape us, shatnez, things like that. Kashrut, the three examples that the rabbis always quote that make no sense, that people are going to make fun of you. Jews and non-Jews will make fun of you for keeping these are paraduma, we understand, we just mentioned, shatnez, and kashrut. Even though kashrut is so basic, and so many Jews who don't keep Shabbos, thank God, still keep kosher and everything. Really, that's one of the prime examples of a chuk. So the Torah apparently introduces the listing of the sexual activities we're not allowed to engage in. Keep my chukim and mishpatim. So it could be it's talking in general, but are the sexual sins chukim or mishpatim?
Well, if mishpatim are case law.
And okay, they're different definitions. We're going to say mishpatim are rational laws that even without the Torah, a society would come up with them. Not to, you don't need the Torah to tell us not to steal. Ratzah kadosh baruch hu lezakat et Yisrael. God wanted to give us great merit, so he told us to do things that we would do anyway. So we could get the merit of doing a mitzvah, because when it becomes part of a mitzvah, you get more of a reward. That's what we say every time we learn. Ratzah kadosh baruch hu zakat Yisrael, bicha kibra lem tor mitzvah, shenemar, Hashem chafetz, leman tziko yagdil terav edir. Rabbina kadosh, whatever. Okay, kadosh rabbana. Fine. So God wanted to give us merit. So a mishpat is something that's obvious, rational. Now, it doesn't mean you always want to do it. People want to, you know, they don't always want to honor their parents or whatever. But mishpatim, so are the prohibitions that follow in the Torah. So let's say, is it a chuk or a mishpat? So of course, obviously, if I'm asking the question, my answer is it depends. It's both. It depends. So let's take an obvious example. Adultery is a mishpat. We understand that adultery is a moral wrong.
I was just going to say, maybe they're all based on morality, and we need to have a morality based on God based on human thought.
Right. So this is what I said. We go from kapara, that's the lowest level of atonement, to tahara, which is a much higher level, and kiddusha, which is an even higher level. Now, I want to argue that not all, but many of the sexual sins are not moral problems, they're holiness issues. In other words, I guess the best example too, listen, we live in a society, it's all over the place, you know, it's just the way, you know, the sexual revolution and everything. So two single people who live together, you know, I don't think that's immoral. I think it's unholy. It's not immoral. Two consenting, it may be a bad idea, it may be wrong, it may be silly. You can say 100 things, but I don't think it's immoral. I maybe I'm wrong, but I think the Torah says it's unholy. Now in the Mishnah in Sota, you know, I said that Kiddushah is a higher level than Torah. So, you know, the book, the Mesilat Yesharim, Rav Chaim Lutzad, the Ramchav, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzad, when he wrote this classic work, Mesilat Yesharim, it's based on the last Mishnah in Masechet Sota. Masechet Sota talks about a woman who's unfaithful to her husband, and which is interesting. And the last three chapters have nothing to do with the Sota itself. It talks about other things, what you can do in Hebrew, other languages. Actually, interesting. A lot of it's very interesting tractate. It also has a lot of the discussion about Exodus, the story of Miriam going to her father to go, you're worse than Paro. That's all in Sota. A lot of this, the Kriyat Yam, is all in Sota. It's a lot of great stuff there. Unrelated to this woman, you know, doing what she did or may not. So the Mishnah ends with Rav Pinchas ben Yair's comment, sort of this ladder to get to God from Zrizut, Nikiyut. And so he says, Tahara, maybe the day preshoot, Tara, from Tara, you go to Prishut. Prishut is to separate. Lifrosh, alti frosh min atzibur. Uprishut midei lidei kedusha. And Prishut, separation, brings to holiness. How does Rashi, what's Rashi's comment? This right after the sexual ethics, kedoshim to you. What does it mean to be holy? So Rashi said, well, chapter 19 follows on chapter 18. Chapter 18 talks about the sexual laws. Oh, holiness means tia prushim min ha'arayim. To separate, lifrosh, he uses, I think it's not a coincidence, he uses that word, lifrosh, liprushimina arayot. But that's holiness, it's not immoral, I don't believe, if two consenting adults engage in relations. If there's adultery, that's immoral. Now, so here's my crazy idea, and it's always a dangerous topic, but it's by far our most downloaded YouTube video. It also happens because it's on the front page, I think, but this was our LGBT panel. We did a number of years ago. We actually did two of them, but the first one I think was more popular, where actually somebody who's gay, who davened in our shul, and he approached me and he asked me if I would run a conference on, you know, gay and orthodoxy, LGBT and orthodoxy, and he'll fund it, he'll pay for it. And then he asked me to, whatever, I don't have to go through the whole story. I just, you know, I find it really, anyway, so he, we did this panel. It was very hard to find, no shul in Toronto would agree to host it. I don't want to start getting it, I only want to mention things because just the concept, I'm not blaming anybody. Two rabbis, the two leading modern Orthodox rabbis, the two biggest modern Orthodox rabbis, the rabbis came to speak at it because we asked them. We felt it's important that we have this discussion in public. And I specifically called up the two rabbis. And both of them said they would be happy to host it in their shuls, but they're not willing to have a fight with their boards. You know, it's not worth it. You have to pick your price. And I totally don't blame them. It just wasn't worth it. So we couldn't do it in a shul. It doesn't really matter, but it's our most popular event. And we had Chaim Rappaport, you know, who's the expert who's written, you know, homosexuality in Orthodox Jew. He was a Lubavitcher, Big Talmud Chacham in England. He was worked at, I don't think it was Hillel, but he worked on campus at Oxford, I think. And he came in contact with, he's like a long beard, Big Talmud Chacham, you know, Shas, like, but he became very involved in this issue. And he's very traditional in his approach. But he has a certain, obviously, openness to it. He's not the here, you know, say we throw out the Torah or whatever. And he spoke. And on the other end, Steve Greenberg was there. And I thought, this person asked me if I would meet with him, with Steve Greenberg. I'm sure many of you know who he is, sort of quote unquote, the first openly Orthodox gay rabbi. And he told me, it's okay if you don't invite him to speak on the panel. I understand if it's too politically inappropriate. And I actually met with him. He was coming to Toronto. And I must say, I don't want to get into the whole thing, but since it's in the Parsha, I was very impressed with the meeting. I thought, you know, I don't know what people write about it, saying, but I was very impressed. He came, my wife always called him, he came with a Sphira beard. It was in the middle of Sphira, and he had a beard. It's just, by the way, this over Yontif, and I was away over Yontif, and whatever, a gay couple, whatever, came, a young couple, sons, friends of my, whatever, and the person asked, he's living with his husband, whatever you call it, and he asked, what bracha is it? Is this a mezonot or a shahakol? And I think that's a beautiful thing. I don't think we have to throw them out. We don't throw out other people from the community. Many people do. Anyways, it's but there's a lot more to say. I'll leave it at that. You can watch the YouTube video. Like I say, it's the most popular by far. Thousands of people have downloaded. I don't know, not so many thousands, but you know, not like but many over 10,000 people. And so I thought that that homosexuality is both a chok and a mishpat. It just depends if you are naturally heterosexual or homosexual. That a person who is, in other words, we now know. I think I'm confident to say that we now know that people do not choose to be gay. As a matter of fact, I was listening on the drive back from New York. I was listening to a podcast, 1840, David. Beshevkin, very interesting. I don't know, we're driving. So he was interviewing somebody who, he wasn't interviewing because he was gay. He was interviewing because of his work. He's a professor at Columbia, I think, of his work with deaf and other people. And it turned, he's gay. And he mentioned that, you know, if his parents had a button to push when he was a kid to make him un-gay, they would have pushed the button. And then he said, if I could have pushed that button, I would have also pushed it. Because it's not easy to be gay, and I've heard that from many other people. They would be very happy to be heterosexual, but that's not how God created them. Why God did that? That's a good question. But so they gave him, so I think for somebody like that, the prohibition of homosexuality is a chuk. It's something that defies logic. It's even unfair in a certain sense. I think for somebody who's heterosexual, then it's a mishpat. What it's for sure, I'm clear that the Torah, I mean, that's how the very liberal interpretation, which no rabbinic authority has yet to say. Maybe in 50 years, somebody will say this. Maybe some great posek will say this, but nobody has yet to say it, that the prohibition of the Torah of homosexuality only applies to people who are not naturally homosexual. And what the Torah didn't want a person to do is engage in multiple sexual, you know, things. And if you can have, you know, a person of the other opposite sex, that's what you should do. That would be a toeva. But I'm not saying that's what it means in the Torah. I'm just saying that I think it could be that this is a chok or a mishpat, depending on. I think for someone, you know, it's very hard for someone who's not, hasn't gone through it to know what you can't know. But to talk to people LGBT, what they experience, it's very hard, and the Orthodox community is not so accommodating to them necessarily. And people who are generally get, you know, lambasted. They're too liberal. They're too this, they're too that. But clearly the Torah writes about it. It's important. And I think there could be a chok mishpat. I will point out, of course, that's the most important thing to point out, that, you know, the word toeva. And you know what? I know people, I'm sure we all do today. When I was growing up, I didn't know anybody who was gay. I mean, I did, but I didn't know they were gay because everybody was in the closet. Today, it's a whole different world. So what was I going to say? It's very hard for them on Yom Kippur to come to shul on Yom Kippur and to hear them read in shul that what the Torah says, that a person who sleeps, a male who sleeps with another male, like she's a female, it's a toeva, it's an abomination. That's company. So I should probably tell my son to stop playing piano, but hold on half a second. He doesn't. He apologizes. Okay. Anyway, so that can be painful. I think we have to be sensitive to the pain of someone who's LGBT and comes to Yom Kippur and he hears the Torah reading. It doesn't mean we can permit it. Again, it's not what the whole purpose of the share, but okay, I'm mentioning it. But it is important to mention that the word toeva appears many other times in the Torah too. And talking about, you know, I said the Torah doesn't want someone who is not homosexual to engage as, you know, fun. I want to try all experiences. The Torah doesn't want that. You know, one of the other times toeva is mentioned is by the mitzvah to get married. The Torah doesn't really talk about a mitzvah to get married, and it doesn't even talk about a mitzvah to get divorced, right? The Torah talks about, here, let me, I don't know if I have it up, but I'll show you. I just think it's important to see. Let's go here. Where are we up to? Dvarim? No. So let's go there and let me go here. Let me just, Dvarim 25. Here we go. Chabad. Okay, fine. We use Chabad. They popped up first. That's 24, previous one. See, here you have to push. This is the story of marriage in the Torah. When a man takes a woman and engages in relations with her, that's the only thing the Torah mentions, how to get married. How to do it by money, that's what we are in our Siddur class. And he doesn't like her. Beit Shammai says you can only get divorced for immorality. Beit Hillel disagrees. He doesn't like her because she did something erva. She did something immoral. And Beit Hillel says, no, davar, anything she does. It doesn't matter why he doesn't like her. She spoils the soup. Bekatav lasefer kritut. He can divorce her and he gives her. But the Torah is telling a story. It's not telling us a mitzvah. It's not saying there's a mitzvah to get married. Or says, when a man gets married and he doesn't like her and he divorces her, it's not about marriage or divorce. And he throws her out of the house. Or she leaves. He doesn't throw her. And then she marries somebody else. And this second person hates her. Strong language. He doesn't like, second marriage doesn't work out either. So he also gives her a get. He also divorces her. And he sends her out of the house. Lo, the first husband, lo yuchab ala rishon, asher shechalashu, then the first husband can't remarry her. That's the law of the Torah. This whole thing, marriage and divorce, is an introduction to this law. Oh, ki toivahi. This is a toiva. It's a toiva if you do that. Velo tachti arts, and we don't want to have that. So it's fascinating. There is no marriage or divorce in the Torah. It's all about second marriage. You can't remarry a woman after she's divorced. You can divorce your wife and remarry her unless you're a Kohen. I know somebody who's a Kohen, divorced his wife and remarried her. No. So the first two kids are Kohanim. This kid from the second marriage are not Kohanim. I mean, it's crazy, but that's okay. But that's not a toeva. That's just a regular prohibition. But if the woman remarried in the middle, you know, that's makes it terrible. But then the Torah has toeva in kashrut. So if you look right here, just let me do Dvarim 14. I think it's Dvarim 14. Lo tocha kol toiva. Very fascinating. Don't eat. And then the Torah lists off. It doesn't even define what it is, but insects, whatever. But the most important case of toiva, and you'll notice there is a fundamental difference between how the Torah describes this.
Isn't it idolatry?
That's also one. Yeah, I didn't show that one. Yeah. But the other one is, of course, the business ethics. And Evan Shlema, lo yelecha beitcha efa gdolakta. You can't have two weights. Two efa measures, one large and one small. Evan Shlema, you have to have a full, complete. You have to sell an ounce of meat. It's not 15 ounces and a half ounces. It's 16 ounces. Utsedek yelach efash leimav etsedek leman yarichun yamin. So you have a long life, honoring your parents, sending away the mother bird, and honesty in business. That's how you get a long life. That's what it says. Al adama ki toavad Hashem alokecha. This is a toeva. Kol ose avel. So here, I think this was pointed out by Reverend Soloveitchik, but I'm not sure if that's who I heard pointed out. But anyway, you know, here he pointed out, "Call whoever does this is a toeva. The person who has dishonest weights is an abomination." When it talks about homosexuality, that's not what it says. The Torah says the act of homosexuality is an abomination. The person is not an abomination. The person who has dishonest weights is an abomination. I don't know any shuls that throw out people because they have dishonest weights. You know what I'm saying? Rav Lichtenstein, I guess I'll remember this and that. You know, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein gave his yortzeit, I think, is on Sunday. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I guess it'll be 2014, I think he passed. 14 or 15, whatever, 6-7 years ago. Wherever I believe your state's on BDR so I guess that's on Tuesday, whenever. So Rav Lichtenstein, you know, like when they had the Israel Day Parade, they still have that in New York. I guess they didn't have it the last couple of years, but the Israel Day Parade, of course, I've been there. So 1 year, a bunch of, you know, they want to have a gay Jewish group march. So this modern Orthodox groups, we can't participate. How can we participate in the march with gay people? So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote, I don't understand. You participate with people who are Mechala Shabbos. You participate with people who don't keep kosher. Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. You're so frum? You can't march with someone who's gay? You can march with a Mechala Shabbos, right? Because the modern Orthodox community, you know, we work together. That's great. Religious art. That's what I said. The Meshach Chachma, Shochenet. Modern Mechala Shabbos together community. Personally, I think you should be Shomer Shabbos, but as a community, we're one community. So I think that's an important point. Yeah, whatever it is, you know. But it's worse. I think it was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Like I said, the person who gave, he's a toeva. He or she is a toeva. It's the act of homosexuality that the Torah considers for whatever reason a toeva. But toeva. Toeva appears in a number of places, also appears on cross-dressing, by the way, which I guess also has a sexual side to it. So that a man who dresses like a woman, the Torah calls that a toeva, actually very fascinating. Anyways, there's more to discuss, and I guess this is the parsha where it's, you know, it's mentioned the prohibition is in the Torah. I think I can tell you, yes, and I much more, when I was, you know, 15 years ago, I knew nothing about the issue. But today, I'm much more attuned to the issue. I know quite a number of people who are gay, and many of them have been driven out or been made to felt to be driven out of the Orthodox community, and that's a tragedy. You know, we don't, it's not for us to judge anybody. And I guess maybe I'll end with what Steven Greenberg told me. I said I was very impressed with him. And he told me he doesn't expect me to agree with him. And he as an Orthodox rabbi, I cannot say that it's allowed. He told me what his interpretation, that it's that there are only certain forms of sexual behavior that aren't allowed. And, you know, there are certain permits. It's not important now. But one of the things he told me is, what do you do? Like, you're a high school principal and a 16-year-old kid comes in Yeshiva High School and says he's gay. Like, what are you going to do? And I'm not going to say it anywhere near as well as he said it. But basically what he told me is that when you come to Shemayim, he says, you know, and he says, you know, we'll get to Shemayim before the kid comes to Shemayim. He says, when this kid comes up to Shemayim, he's going to go to God and he's going to say, God, you know, I tried really hard to keep the mitzvot, but I could only keep 612 out of 613. I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep all the mitzvot. But God, you know, it's your fault. You made me that way. What do you want from me? And he says, I want you as the rabbi to be defending him in court. And you're going to stand up and say, even though it doesn't mean you agree that, but you're going to say, you're going to defend him. And the way he expressed it was a very beautiful thought. That's not mutter or usser, but I think it's, we have a lot of work to do in this area. We have a lot of work to do in a lot of areas, but anyways, but my point that I was trying to make, I got a little bit, sidetracked, but I focused too much of this. I see I have to end already. I'm sorry, it's late, is the idea that much of the sexual ethics is holiness. It's not immorality. I don't think it's immoral. And that's the Torah's moving in Parshat Acharei from Kapara to Tahara, Prishut, Lifrosh min arayot. That's holiness. The sexual ethics is holy. Holiness is not the same as, I can be unholy, but not a bad person. I'm just not, they want to be greater, and to the level of Kedusha. Anyways, let's do a very quick review. It's Parshat Acharimot, because we live in Chutz Laaretz. I assume most people here live, everybody lives in Chutz Laaretz. We talked a little bit about Yom HaShoah, the death of too many righteous, and the tragedy, and how Yom HaShoah will be memorialized, we don't know. And I do advise you, if you probably, you can Google J.J. Schechter's article on Yom HaShoah, what will be with it, and Rav Herzog wanted a fast day, and the big fight didn't have a fast day, acknowledge it, who knows, and the survivors, they're very few left, and those who are left are quite elderly, and that's also a problem. Some of them are poor and impoverished, and what can we do? I mean, we should do. We have to do something. Okay, and then we discuss why Nadav and Avihu is mentioned here, because basically not to make the mistake their children did. The Torah often mentions the sins of the righteous or the whatever four times. Every time, four times Nadav and Avihu, four times Moshe sin, Yehuda's children. Torah wants to warn us very much. Rashi does not hear. Only by Miriam does Rashi quotes the death of the righteous atone. We didn't talk about that yet. I said I would. I apologize. I'll have to do that another time. What's the connection between the death of the righteous and atonement? You have to understand what that means. The surface, who cares? Why? Because a righteous person dies, there's atonement. We'll have to leave that for another time. And but that's only by Miriam. Miriam, for sure, she has no reason to die. Not the many of you were punished. They did something wrong. So I can understand perhaps why Rashi does not quoted them, of course, Tara and Tuma. It's a death doesn't go with our parsha. It's all about the Tara of Yom Kippur. God dwells among the impure. As long as the community gets along, the Meshech Chachma is a beautiful idea that we're judged very differently as individuals and as community. And I saw somebody put in the chat box, wasn't Miriam punished? Yeah, that was by God punished her. That's right. That God and the Lashon Hara, and the Torah is obviously different. The Torah is setting up models for us, but a Jewish court doesn't give any punishment for Lashon Hara. That was God's punishment to her. But that's the difference between individuals and And communities, and then we spoke the second half about the sexual ethics, how pikuach nefesh is said right here, and the sexual ethics is on one level holiness. We read it on Yom Kippur. If you're going to develop a relationship with God, you have to develop a relationship with other human beings, and therefore Yom Kippur was the perfect day to find the marriage partner. Then you went out in the middle of the afternoon, the single people would go out in the fields and dance together. It's an amazing thing because it's about Yom Kippur. And then we come back to Shul and we read about the arayot, the sexual sins, some of which are clearly immoral and terrible, and you're hurting other people, and some of you're not hurting people, but you're not doing what you should be. You might be hurting yourself, but it's clearly a lack of kedusha. And then we discussed, of course, the very issue. I think it's a big issue of how we deal today with the LGBT community and how the Torah refers to it, and what the meaning might be. And perhaps you can say that for some people it's a chok, for some it's a mishpat. I don't know that it really matters, but I think it's just an interesting idea. Okay. We'll stop here. If anybody has any questions, please let me know. We'll be continuing tomorrow. I know back to back my sitter class 9:35. I told you because I'm teaching till 9:30. And, so at 9:35, we'll have the sitter class tomorrow. We'll start a Rabbi Yishmael Omer. That's more or less where we got up to. B'shloshes rei midot ha-toren nidresh b'hem. And then we'll go in the Psuke de Zimra. I don't imagine tomorrow we will, but in future weeks, so everybody's invited. Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag is back with his series on Tehillim and the Psalmist and the exegetes. And then on Monday, what do we have on Monday? On Monday, Mark Shapiro is back. We have and then on Tuesday, we have two new series that are starting. Malka Simkowitz at 2 p.m. It's 1 p.m. in Chicago where she's based, 2 p.m. And Michelle Chesner, who is the Jewish librarian at Columbia University, talking about the books and the history of books. I think it's a fascinating topic. She'll be giving a three-part series. That's going to be 8:30 in the evening. So that's on Tuesday. And Dr. Sokola will be starting a series on Tamei HaMitzvot back in his regular Wednesday night slot. Okay. I look forward to learning with you and seeing you. And please, as always, invite a friend. Let me see if there are any questions that I missed. I don't really think so. Okay, wasn't Miriam punished for Lashon Hara? Okay, thank you very much. Wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom, and hope to see you soon. And be well. Laila Tov.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And don't forget, Simi Peters is on Monday.
Right. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Of course, Simi Peters on Megillat Ruth. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't have it in front of me. And okay, thank you for that. Yeah, it's always good. And more ma'at va'seh harbeh, you know. But